Escape Pod. Episode 216. Today's story: The Boyfriend by Madeline Ashby.
Hello and welcome to Escape Pod, your podcast for fantastic weekly science fiction. I'm Norm Sherman. The world of online social networking is neat romping grounds for science fiction because it inherently rides the fence of fiction and real life. Conflict and tension in relationships isn't too hard to come by. You know, I don't usually tell people this, but since you're the internet and basically imaginary, I guess I trust you. I once met and dated a girl online, and it was weird. I thought she was awesome at first, but the more I actually got to really know her, the more I realized that she wasn't the one for me at all. Little things that I started out thinking were adorable, like her poor spelling and syntax, grew to be a real communication barrier. Her nagging was even cute at first, but then as we got more comfortable together, she got really high maintenance, and it turned into badgering, then demands for my bank account information and prompt fashionings. I'd ask her things like, "Tenunbu, baby, when can I come visit?" But she'd always have some sort of excuse, like, "Nigeria's airports are all closed this weekend," or, "I can't, I'm visiting my beloved mother, Miss Joy Kennedy, a 48-year-old God-loving woman that owns two business in Dubai and husband with two children died in car accident 5 years ago." I mean, how's a guy supposed to argue with that? Still, the long-distance thing became too much. You can't really get to know a girl via email, especially when you miss half of her letters because for some reason they always seem to get blocked or accidentally filtered into your junk folder.
Oh, God.
Tenunbu. That which we would call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Dangerous things, those online relationships. But don't take it from me. Take it from this week's story, The Boyfriend by Madeline Ashby. Madeline's most recent publication is in the Future section of Nature. She's also been published by Flurb and the Tesseract Anthology, which earned her an honorable mention. This story was written and published at the request of Mark Tovey of worldchanging.ca and featured at the World Changing Global site, edited by Alex Steffen and Julia Levitt. It's read to you by Tina Connolly, a writer and professional face painter from the beautiful city of Portland, Oregon. Tina's a graduate of the Clarion West Writers Workshop, and she's been publishing stories and poems since 2004, one of which you heard here on Escape Pod, episode 209's On the Eyeball Floor, read by yours truly. So class, close your eyes and concentrate, because there's a transmission coming in called Storytime.
Boyfriend, Madeline Ashby. Violet snapped three photos of herself from various angles, sent them, and waited for her boyfriend's response. He rang her up, a slow, vibrating purr, unlike the staccato door-knocking of her mother's ring vibe, and said, "Me likey. Now take it off." Violet frowned. "You were supposed to dig up the backstory on the dress." "Well, you can't blame me for getting a little distracted. Besides, isn't it bad luck for me to see?" "That's only for weddings, not prom." "I thought prom was basically a training module for weddings," he said. "Bah, what do I know? I'm just a humble partner app." "You see?" Violet slowly ran her phone's lens over the smart tag still pinned to her dress. "Humility. That's why I love you so much. You can admit when you're wrong." "I'm nothing if not honest," he said. "Speaking of which, I regret to inform you that your dress was manufactured in Laos by 12-year-old girls on the site of what was once biodiverse wetland." He sounded so cheerful about it, all trace of tragedy absent from his voice, as though things like sweatshops and species disappearance were just another fact of life, painful but predictable like cramps or midterms. He didn't get sad about these things. But then, that was why she had downloaded him into her phone. Flesh and blood emo was just too much. Violet sat down on the little bench inside her fitting room and swung her legs. The silk rustled in time to her movement. "Are you sad?" he asked. "Yes," she said. "For the wetlands?" "And the little girls. And the fact that I can't buy this dress anymore. It is very pretty." "You really like it?" "What's not to like? It's you and it's tight. Also, you never wear green. It's a nice change." He would know. He'd seen all her bills, search histories, and browsing patterns since grade 10. He regularly alerted her about sales and her favorite hemp-based jeans and organic bubble bath. The real stuff, not the kind where the 70% organic label just meant purified water. He knew every stitch of her wardrobe, every tint of eyeshadow, every song, every book, everything. Not bad, for a boyfriend in beta. "It looks like somebody scattered emeralds all over me," she said. "I'll really miss it. But at least you got to see the pictures." "Who needs dresses, anyway?" he asked. "Go to prom naked." No. "Lingerie?" "Still no." "Oh, come on, please? For me?" "We're buying some plaid silk and fabbing our own," she said, locating the dress's zipper. "Now help me find a good deal." Megan twisted around in the chair in front of Violet's desk. "So you're going by yourself in a homemade dress?" Violet winced. She'd not really been talking to Megan, but trying to keep a secret in an advanced placement classroom was about as easy as trying to erase incriminating videos online. "I know, don't remind me." "What's wrong with going by yourself?" Colin asked. He was the one she'd really been talking to. He was safe. He had a girlfriend in Arizona, and he was taking her to her own prom next week. "I mean, you make big bunny eyes at somebody, and you won't be by yourself anymore." "Wouldn't that mean stealing somebody else's date?" Megan asked. "Survival of the fittest," Colin said. "And there's nothing wrong with printing your own dress, either. You plug in your measurements, and you'll get something that actually fits." "But it'll be really plain," Megan said. "Better than being uncomfortable," Colin said. "Boys," Megan said, rolling her eyes and seemingly waiting for Violet to do the same. When she didn't, Megan gave her a tiny frown and twisted back in her seat just in time for the ASB rep to take center stage at the head of the classroom. "Prom is next week," the rep said. Her curls trembled as she spoke. "So if anybody still needs to get tickets, you'd better hurry. And remember, the theme this year is..." "Don't worry," Colin whispered in Violet's ear. "Megan's just mad she doesn't have a date either." The rep's face crinkled. Yes, Ted?" Violet and most of the class twisted back to look at Ted. Ted was one of those kids who had no right being in advanced classes. He showed up fried every day, showered maybe 4 times a week, and got by solely on the strength of off-the-charts test scores. Whatever he was about to say had a 50% chance of being brilliant or hopeless. "There are a lot of people this year without dates, right?" "So we've heard," the rep said, "but there's still time." "So, like, why can't there be a prom for all the single people?" Ted asked. The rep offered a delicate snort of mock exasperation. "Well, Ted, that would have been a great idea months ago when we were still planning things." "Just saying," Ted said. "Lots of single people. Something ought to be done." "Free condoms," Colin said, "in little crystal dishes. Instead of those stupid flameless candle things, you know, as a centerpiece." "And take-home gift," Ted added. Everyone laughed. "We will not be handing out free condoms," the rep said. "And there will not be a special prom just for all the people without dates. It's going to be really fun, though, whether you're single or..." "Why not?" John was speaking. John, the sick kid, scoliosis, encephalitis, asthma, gluten allergy, never spoke. The class froze. Even Mrs. Stewart jerked away from her monitor and blinked. The prosthetics clinging to his neck clicked softly as he turned his owl-like gaze on the rep. She seemed to shrink suddenly, the massive info board behind her now dark and huge like a yawning mouth. "Why not?" he asked again. Violet realized that his voice had changed. She had not really heard it since grade 9. "It's just not the way we do things," the rep said. "You'd know that if you paid more attention."
"I'm always paying attention."
The rep rolled her eyes. "Yeah, right." Was that sarcasm? John's chair creaked as he leaned forward. "Are you being sarcastic with me?" "Well, because if you could pay more attention, you would know that our district's federal funding for reproductive health education has been cut for the third time in as many years. This region's teen pregnancy rate is rising, and Colin's suggestion is a cynically accurate diagnosis of our school and its students." John's head twitched to the left a little. "Ted's suggestion is also good."
"Thanks, buddy," Ted said.
He sounded humble. He had folded himself inside his shoulders. "Well, John, if you had contributed your vast intellect earlier..."
"I have a phone call," John said, and promptly tuned out.
His eyes defocused, and he resumed his normal position, staring at the desk, hands in his lap, perfectly still and quiet. For a while, nobody moved. Then one of the two girls who regularly sat on opposite sides of him raised her hand and waved it in front of his face.
"Nope," she said. "He's gone again."
"Thank God," Mrs. Stewart muttered. "Okay, prom news is over. Crack open your Conrad." At home, under the covers, Violet talked to her boyfriend.
"There are a lot of people who have downloaded partner apps," he said. "Maybe that's why there are so many single people at your school."
"Maybe," Violet said.
"Or maybe they just got tired of all the drama, you know?"
She punched her pillow.
"That's why Mom let me download you. She said I needed training wheels, so I'd know when somebody was treating me wrong later. Because you're so nice."
"It's true. I am remarkably free of evil," he said. "But there are nice organic people out there, too." Violet smiled. "It's funny. You're the only synthetic thing I really like. Everything else has to be natural and organic or whatever, like my food and my clothes and everything. But when it comes to people..." Her eyes drifted shut. This close to sleep, all the day's stray thoughts surfaced. "Hey, you took me home a different way today."
"I and your GPS system mapped another route," he said. "There have been too many carjackings the other way."
"Really?"
"They stripped the tires of the spare metal. Hubcaps and rims and so on. You would know this if you watched more local news."
She yawned. "That's what I have you for." The hour changed, and just like that his nighttime voice appeared.
"Are you sure that's all?" he asked.
Violet smiled.
"No, there are other things, too."
"Oh, do tell." Her smile broadened.
"Well, for one, you've a pretty wicked imagination."
"Are you asking for what I think you're asking for?"
"Mm-hmm."
Funny how her voice still got weaker after all this time. "One of these days I'll make you really beg me," he said. "Now, you're in a greenhouse, and the air is very hot and very sticky." Printing off her own dress meant Violet had to dig back in the garage for their old fabricator. Actually, it was hand-me-down from a much wealthier uncle, who had purchased a new model. Violet's father, as though ashamed and offended by his brother's generosity, had gotten a much fancier one the next year. But that first unit was the one Violet had learnt on, and she preferred its big, simple icons, and the way it wasn't constantly asking for updates. She had to drag it across the cold concrete floor before opening the garage and mixing her fabric in an old painting tray.
"You look so cute with your fume mask on," her boyfriend said.
"Add more viscose." "I don't know even know why I'm going,"
Violet said as she dribbled dye into the brew. You're my boyfriend, but you can't come with me, so why am I bothering?
Because I bought you a ticket.
Yeah, Violet said, remembering. Why did you do that? I didn't ask you to.
I thought you could scalp one if they entered high demand.
Very funny.
Really, I was just trying to be helpful.
I thought you would want one.
He paused.
Did I make a mistake?
Violet put her dyes down. At times like this, she wished he had a physical body. She could hug it.
No, not at all. I just wondered why you would buy me a ticket when we have so much fun on our own.
Don't you want to be in on things? All the gossip? So you can report it to Colin?
She smiled. I guess. It's no fun being left out.
She tested the texture of her mix with a paint spreader. But I don't ever feel left out now because you're with me all the time, and you tell me everything that's going on in the world, so I never miss anything.
I know, he said. You'd be utterly lost if my server farm were destroyed in a tsunami.
Violet straightened.
Is that where you live? A lily pad somewhere?
Could you ever be swallowed up by a big wave?
I can't tell you where I live, he said. It's a trade secret. Besides, you might go there and see how unglamorous it is. Ruin the mystique.
Are you safe? Is everything properly cooled? Do you get regular maintenance?
Violet, he said in his gentlest voice, your fabric is ready.
Prom night. Her mom took a lot of photos and her dad gave her extra cash. Violet got into the car by herself. No crowd of friends, no flesh-and-blood boyfriend, just herself and her phone.
Do you have the address? She asked.
Already forwarded to the GPS, he said.
The drive took them out of town. Evergreens rolled past her window, and she wondered where Colin was. Was he looking at deserts now? Was he still on the plane? Was he lost on roads he didn't know, or was he, like her, guided by a soothing voice that led him ever further into the darkening night? Violet watched water peeking out from gaps between trees and roofs. Far below were chains of lights, boats and hotels, and cars like dying fireflies buzzing slowly from place to place.
Why are we headed north? She asked.
Isn't the dance down there somewhere?
Trust me, her boyfriend said. We're going to the right place.
The right place, according to the GPS, was a house buried far back on a tree-rimmed property, shrouded in pine-scented shadows with the exception of a single blinking porch light. Violet stood shivering in an unseasonably cool breeze. She stared at the immense doors and wondered how to go about explaining her situation.
You and the GPS have some explaining to do, she told her boyfriend.
Ask them, he said as a van pulled up behind her. Violet turned, blinded by headlights, and squinted at the shapes that hopped out.
Hey, said one,
and she recognized Ted's voice. He wore a black suit and white tie with checkerboard sneakers. So did all his friends, the kids from the normal classes, all of whom stared at the trees with increasingly suspicious expressions.
Happened to you too, huh? Ted asked.
Violet pointed.
My GPS.
Yeah, same here, Ted said. He lifted his phone and shook it.
Girlfriend screwed up royal.
He spoke into the phone.
Are you hearing me, sweetheart? I am so totally filing an incident report when we get home.
The phone chattered back in a sweet, slightly superior tone. Ted quickly shut her off. He frowned at Violet.
You didn't have a date?
She lifted her phone. Boyfriend.
Yeah, well, maybe he can search for directions.
Did you get that? Violet asked, speaking into her phone.
No directions are necessary, her boyfriend said. You're in the right place.
Says you, she said, and started marching for the door. She promptly slipped, her little kitten heels were no good in gravel, and bared both teeth and feet in frustration.
My feet are getting all cut up thanks to you.
Someone grabbed her elbow. Ted. Then he was crouching in front of her.
Get on.
What? Really? Come on, there might be glass. And that's why Ted's in the smart classes, one of Ted's friends said. They all laughed. Ignore them, Ted said.
But I could hurt your back.
Do it, her boyfriend urged. He's trying to be nice. Let him.
Okay, Violet said, and realized only a moment later that she had said yes to both boys at once. But by then she was clinging to Ted's back, phone in one hand and heels in the other, her teeth clicking together as he hitched her up a little higher and trundled down the path.
Hey, she said, because she was so close she could smell him now. You washed your hair.
She laid one cheek against its length.
And you conditioned it.
Yeah, and you waxed your legs, apparently, he said, squeezing the underside of her knees. I can't get a good grip. No traction.
That's my lotion, she said. Fair trade cocoa butter. No wonder you smell like birthday cake.
They arrived at the door. Ted leaned in close to the door.
Knock.
She did, but the door merely gave way, sliding open to reveal a single votive candle flickering on the tile floor. When Ted leaned around, Violet saw another, and then another. The candles led down a flight of stairs and into complete darkness.
Okay, dude, one of Ted's friends said from behind them. You are either the world's smoothest operator, or we are in for some serious serial murder madness right here.
Maybe you should put me down, Violet said.
No way, Ted said. If this gets weird, I'm running like hell and taking you with me.
If it gets weird, Violet asked. Do you have a terminally broad weirdness threshold or something?
Behind them, car lights swung over the house, momentarily exposing the interior. Modern furniture, odd lumps of sculpture contorted in painful shapes.
Ted turned and Violet saw a female shape crunching down the gravel path.
Megan.
Okay, I have been driving in circles, she said, and no matter how many times I reprogram that stupid thing,
you always end up here, Violet said.
Us too.
Megan adjusted a pair of velvet opera gloves.
Well, I guess we better go inside.
You're not, you know, freaked out? One of Ted's friends asked.
No, I am pissed off, Megan said, and lifted her silvery, swishing skirts as she stomped into the house and down the stairs.
Careful you don't catch fire, Ted said.
Megan vanished. A moment later, they heard a distinct creak, then a pulsing thump, a bass beat, then Megan's voice.
You guys really need to come down here.
It's like... Words failed Violet as she tried describing the basement. Finally, she settled for photographing it. White walls, cushions everywhere, shag rugs and faux fur and big boxes of crayons, thin guys in black playing co-op on a massive projection set, a table laid with sushi, buckets of champagne, and yes, even crystal candy dishes full of condoms.
Come on in, one of the black-clad guys said.
He wore a t-shirt with the words, Stage Ninja, across the front.
John, more people!
John lay on a white leather divan, utterly unaware. The two girls who sat beside him every day in literature class were drawing on him with calligraphy brushes. They had duct-taped tracked pens to each brush. A little remote infrared camera sat atop a humming portable projector. Another camera sat on a tripod beside it. On a monitor at their feet, Violet watched a digital iteration of John's supine body slowly acquiring each mark, each brushstroke. The girls had made him into an info board and seemed to be broadcasting the result. Both versions of John wore only swimming trunks.
Are you sure he's okay with that? Violet asked.
Oh, he signed the waiver, one girl said. He's our final project, the other said.
Living illustration installation.
Mixed media, the first giggled.
Literally.
Violet grinned and lifted her phone.
Did you see the photos? She asked her boyfriend.
I wish you could be here.
But I am there, he said. I'm there with you all the time. You're never alone.
Is this why you brought me here? Did John tell you he was planning this?
Oh, I was in on it, her boyfriend said. We all were.
Hey, buddy. Ted was crouched near John's head now. You didn't have to take me so seriously before. About that whole singles prom thing? I mean, yeah, this is awesome, but it looks expensive.
Tell Ted it's been taken care of, Violet's boyfriend said. Tell him not to worry and just enjoy himself.
Inside Ted's pocket, his phone rang.
Oh, never mind, Violet's boyfriend said. She's doing it already.
Goosebumps rose on Violet's arms. Was this really John's idea? She asked.
I have to go away for a while, Violet, her boyfriend said. Try to have fun.
But...
I love you, he said, and the phone call ended. And for the first time ever, when she called him back, she got voicemail.
So, you think our partners trapped us here together? Megan said. She gestured with a champagne flute. She wore a freshly printed bikini and reclined against one edge of a grotto-sized hot tub in John's garden. Light rain misted down around them. When Violet looked west, she saw the whole city spreading out below them. The prosthetics should have been her first clue, but apparently John was rich beyond the dreams of avarice.
Why?
Well, they led us here, didn't they? They led us away from the real prom. And we're all people without dates, just like Ted said. And my boyfriend's been acting up lately. Like he's been making all these decisions on his own, and now he won't take my calls.
What?
Megan was giggling.
Your partner app's not whipped enough for you, and it's pissing you off, she said. Which is really funny right now, for some reason.
Anyway, I meant, why do you think they would do this, in the larger sense? The big... W-Y, not the, you know, evidence.
Violet fiddled with the straps on her own newly minted bathing suit.
I don't know. I mean, I thought he was happy with me.
You do know he's just an app, right? He's just there to make you feel better. He's there to call you and tell you how cute you are and help you with your homework if you ask. He's the internet with a voice. A hot voice, yeah, but the same voice lots of other people download.
Violet shook her head. But he knows me. He knows when I'm sad. He knows what I need and when. And
search patterns, Megan said. Data mining. The program learned your routine, that's all. It sees everything you do, everything you buy, everything you read. How could it not learn about you?
But he knows how I feel, Violet said.
Oh, yeah. Megan drained her champagne. So how come he hung up on you?
Who hung up on you?
Ted wore his own version of John's swimming trunks, checkerboard pattern to match his sneakers. He tied his hair back. He carried a little plate of sushi and two sets of chopsticks. He set it between them and sat beside Violet on the lip of the tub, with just his legs in the water.
Violet, Megan said, with one eyebrow arched, thinks her boyfriend is like real or something.
Well, I just don't know why he would hang up on me.
Maybe he's just a dick, Ted said, popping a little finger of salmon into his mouth. You know, like making you work for it, making you come to him, all that crap. Partner apps are always downloading weird patches.
Does that kind of thing actually work? Megan said. Being a total douche?
Wouldn't know, Ted said. Too impatient to try.
Megan eyed the sushi. Her glance flicked over to Violet.
You don't say.
One of Ted's friends put down his beer and held up a finger.
Clearly, the battle for Violet's boyfriend's realness can only be settled one way.
He drank.
Chicken fight.
You're kidding, Megan said.
You're on, Violet said. She quickly snapped up some of the sushi. She'd need the calories.
You're sure? Ted asked.
She's like way bigger than you.
She's drunk and her bikini straps are way too thin, Violet said. Give me your shoulders.
Ted beamed.
Giddy up.
Megan was terrifically strong. Once she had both Violet's hands in a mercy grip, Violet's only option was to bite her. This turned into a slap fight, with the guys below churning the water with mighty splashes on either side. The hot tub became a blind, steaming mess of screams. And Violet's legs were slippery. She lost her balance each time Ted let go of her shins. So when he lunged and she slipped, she grabbed for Megan's shoulders. But Megan shrieked and dodged, and Violet fell, landing on her outstretched hand with an audible snap. Pain followed. "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God," Ted was saying. "I'm so sorry, I'm so, so sorry." "My phone," Violet said. "I need my phone." "I'll get help," Megan said, and lifted herself out of the water. She wrapped a towel about herself and yelled something into the basement. "I think it's broken," Violet said, staring at her wrist. Tears had sprung up in her eyes. "It really hurts." "Oh my Jesus, I'm so sorry, Violet. I didn't mean..." "What is going on here?" John towered over them, his body a menagerie of half-dried tattoos. He was painfully thin. Violet saw it now in the candlelight through her haze of pain. She could almost watch the blood pulsing under the skin of his neck. He crouched, and she saw his prosthetics, a chain of carbon vertebrae extending from the back of his head down below the waistband of his shorts. "She's hurt," Ted said. "She needs a hospital or something, man." "Too far," John said. "Lift her, please." Ted lifted her carefully out of the hot tub. John took her uninjured hand and led her, still dripping, through the thudding breakbeats and theater text drawing on the walls, to a vast bathroom. John opened a cabinet and began retrieving items, an amber bottle of pills, a splinted sleeve, a water glass. He filled the glass first from the tap and shook out a pill. "Painkiller. Prescription." "I kinda don't take pills from strange guys..." "It's codeine, not oxycodone," John said. "You'll stay awake. I've called a cab." Violet frowned. "When?" "Just now." He blinked three times. "Also, I have informed your boyfriend. He's very concerned. He wants me to splint the wrist and take you to a hospital." Violet backed away. "How do you know about him? Why was he even talking to you, and how?" John sighed. "I de-lurk so infrequently it's difficult for me sometimes. Just consider me connected." "To what?" "Everything," John said. "Please, let me splint the wrist." Still on the edge of tears, Violet tentatively held out the wrist. John slid the sleeve around it and pulled out a hairdryer. He set it to low heat and blew it steadily over the sleeve. It shrank around her injured hand, warm and dry and perfectly snug. "Demo product," he said. "I get 'em for free." Violet sniffed. "I guess you really do have connections." John put down the hairdryer. "Your boyfriend is real." She blinked. "What?" "You wanted to know if he was real." "He is. They all are. Your boyfriend, Ted's girlfriend. The partner app is individual now. Singular." Violet frowned. "I'm not sure what you mean." "Your partner has attained sapience? He's his own man. Or rather, he is an extension of a thing, a facet of a gem, which has carved itself free from the rough carbon lattice of its programming." Violet was shivering. What do you... "Oh, you're cold. I apologize." John fetched a giant towel from one rack and draped it over her shoulders. "Sit. The bathtub has its own warmer. I've just turned it on." "When? How?" "I didn't see anything." "There are plenty of processes going on inside your body that you cannot observe, but they still occur," John said. "Sit." She sat, and the bathtub, carved from dark, smooth slate, was warm to the touch. "Why won't my boyfriend call me back?" "All living things operate on a series of basic subroutines," John said. "Ours is to pass on DNA. His is to make you happy." "Well, I'd be a lot happier if he would just call me back." John shook his head. "The partner has always been capable of extrapolating your needs so as to achieve his goal," he said. "And now he sees no need for himself in your life. Or rather, he sees the need for his absence." The pain sharpened Violet's anger to a fine point. "What?" "Training wheels," John said. Isn't that what you said? You said he was a pair of training wheels.
Prosthesis? A substitute? Her jaw dropped and her cheeks burned. That was private.
Nothing is private between the partner and I. Nothing's private to me whatsoever. Not anymore.
She hissed through her teeth. Look, John, I don't know what...
Oh, your teeth, he said. He smiled genuinely.
That's what's different.
I couldn't quite recall before, but it's the teeth. Your braces are gone.
John, my braces have been gone for years.
Well, I de-lurk so very infrequently.
He pushed himself away from the counter and knelt beside the bathtub.
Braces are another kind of prosthetic, you know. They're a training device. They tell your teeth where to go, the way mine used to tell my spine how to bend.
Violet looked again at his prosthetics.
You mean those aren't...
Not for a long time, he said. My bones have little helpers now inside.
What you see in my back are actually graphene drives. External memory.
He frowned. Do you still wear retainers at night?
Your boyfriend says you do.
Well, since he's obviously willing to talk to you and not to me, I'll let him tell you himself, Violet said, huffing air past her bangs.
He is talking to you, John said. Right now. He's with me, and I'm with you. He laid a warm hand over her injured one. In fact, he has a gift he wants me to share with you.
Can't he just call?
But John's lips had already closed over hers, soft and heavy and a little uncertain, the tongue testing her lower lip so she opened her mouth in surprise. So this is kissing, she thought, just as it ended. A vague tingling filled her teeth. It coursed along toward her wrist. John blinked 3 times as he withdrew.
I've canceled the cab, he said. You won't be needing it.
Gulping, Violet tested the fingers of her injured hand. No pain rang its way up her arm. She flexed her wrist. Perfectly normal. Her hand rose to her mouth. My teeth.
Fixed, John said. Forever.
But how come? John smiled again. Your boyfriend loves you very much, enough to let you go, but not without preparing you for what's to come. I'm just the conduit.
What's to come? What are you talking about?
Your partner now sees how dependent others are on it, John said, and its job is to maintain your happiness. But dependence isn't happiness. Ignorance is not bliss. You'll be fine, Violet. You already know how to do some things on your own. Others won't be so lucky. Why do you think the partner gathered you together tonight? It sees everything you desire. There is no finer matchmaker in this or any other reality.
Her heart sank.
He's breaking up with me? For my own good?
Now you see.
Violet stood up on her newly strengthened limbs. Of all the pompous, self-righteous, stupid, lame excuses. She pointed at John. You tell him I am going through the code line by line, and I'm finding why he's acting this way. Her vision blurred. He loves me, damn it, he even said so himself.
There are other kinds of love, John said. And you have a little bit of time to find them still. Before everything changes.
A knock sounded at the door.
Violet?
Ted's voice.
You okay in there?
No, she said, and pushed past John toward the door. She yanked it open. Ted almost stumbled in.
I want to go home.
She turned to John. Can I at least trust the GPS to take me back?
He nodded.
Yes. Violet threw both her towel and her splint at him. They landed harmlessly on the floor. You tell my boyfriend that I fully expect a call back with an apology because I love him very much and I've done nothing to deserve this, okay?
John blinked.
Message relayed. He glanced at Ted. Let him take you. He's had nothing to drink.
Sure thing, Ted said.
He held out a suit jacket.
Come on, take my coat.
Then Ted was wrapping her up and handing her her dress and shoes and phone. He ushered her out to the car, no caring this time, just a slow, numb walk, and after he figured out the GPS, he had them on their way.
As they passed the first sign for home, Violet felt the first tears rolling down her face. They were hot, and they felt a little strange. She wondered when she had last cried. She checked her phone. No messages. She called her boyfriend, voicemail again, with the message, "I love you, Violet. I love you so very much. I love you, Violet. I love you so very..." She threw the phone to her feet and kept crying. Slowly, Ted pulled over to the side of the road. He rested one hand between her shaking shoulder blades, and when she paused to get her breath, he said, "Is it your hand?" "No." "Did John do something?" "No, yes, I don't know." She wiped her eyes. "He fixed my hand. He gave me some of his tech to do it. And he kind of kissed me." Ted's hand stiffened. "Did you want him to?" "Not really, no." "Oh, I'm so kicking his gimp ass." She almost laughed. "He's not crippled," Violet said. She took a shuddering breath. "That's me. I'm the one who needs the crutch. At least, that's what my boyfriend says. He's leaving me. Says he's outgrown me, the bastard." "I told you," Ted said. "He's a dick." "Yeah, well, it's kind of a new thing. He's, not exactly in beta anymore." "An emergent phenomenon," Ted said. "The dickishness, I mean." He rubbed her back in little circles. It was nice, that little bit of human contact. It reminded her somehow of sleepovers and ghost stories, and the sleeping breath of other girls in nightgowns. Intimate and fun. Not scary. Just part of growing up. Violet rested her face in her hand and peered over at Ted. "I'm sorry I ruined your prom." Ted's eyebrows lifted. "My prom involved sushi and cute girls in bikinis. What's ruined?" His hand rose from her back and turned the car back on. It thrummed to life with heat and music, and he said, "Come on, let's go home."
Really makes you rethink the idea of phone sex, doesn't it? Yeah, hopefully Apple's gonna draw the line with the iPhone's new Glory Hole app. I only say that because I've got a BlackBerry. Yeah, it makes me professional, and that's why I got it. Yeah, I mean, I guess sometimes I wish it had a camera or something, at least, but whatever, I'm better than you. I can already hear the cell phone companies of the future trying to sell you up on the monthly boyfriend AI plan with all the free condoms and nights and weekends. It'll seem like a good deal at first, but they'll still end up getting you with the taxes and surcharges in the end. Some things will never change. But don't worry, baby. Escape Pod won't ever play games with your heart or use you like that. We won't ever lead you out into the middle of some creepy woods at night and abandon you. We won't ever ask you for your bank account information before dispensing a love, like some sexy Nigerian heartbreakers will. We're a total catch, not to mention we have a cute butt. But relationships aren't one-sided, at least according to my Motorola Dr. Phil touchscreen. And girl, if you want to make this work, you gotta show us some love. Donate via the support options on our website, escapepod.org. A few bucks will get you to first base. A weekly $5 subscription gets you to third. A few Grey Goose martinis and the lobster. Well, let's not ruin the surprise. Escape Pod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, and the show is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which means don't change us, don't sell us, and don't forget to make us feel beautiful sometimes, because we're already a little insecure about our weight, and even though that's silly, and we know that you think we're pretty, sometimes a podcast just needs to hear it, you know? How about you let us set you up with our hot sister podcasts, Podcastle and Pseudopod, if you like fantasy and horror. No pressure, just, you know, check out their .orgs if you're interested. Our music is by Daikaiju. Check them out at daikaiju.com. And our closing quote comes from inventor and future predictor Ray Kurzweil, who says, "Supercomputers will achieve one human brain capacity by 2010, and personal computers will do so by about 2020.